This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Knicks in six. Let's roll. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Carlin with you this evening up until our final play-in matchup. It's the Warriors and the Grizzlies coming up just a little bit later on here on 98.7 ESPN. Let us roll, friends, because this is an exciting time. Hit us up on Twitter at Chris Carlin with all of your Knicks thoughts. And we're going to be Knicks from front to back for the most part tonight because it's special. It's a special, special time. And if there's something that the last 8 years have taught you, it's not to take this for granted. You know, there was a time when the playoffs were an assumption and not something that was looked at as an remarkable achievement in this town. So we look at it a little bit differently now that it's been gone, don't we? We do. And I think from that standpoint, it's a good thing. It's exciting to me that through everything you have been through as a fan, just the complete buffoonery, frankly, on so many levels of the last 20 years, finally this weekend, you get a chance to put it in the rear view. And hopefully, this is just the start of what will be a protracted stretch in the history of the Knicks where they have reclaimed their rightful position as one of the top organizations in the league. And more importantly, as a perennial playoff team. That's what the New York Knicks are supposed to be. So now, this weekend, it is upon us. And a matchup with the Atlanta Hawks. And I've been going through this matchup all week long, trying to come up with the different reasons for each team to win this series. And I came away with Knicks in six, and here's why. The biggest advantage that the Knicks have here has nothing to do with the tangibles of this series, but maybe more the intangibles of this series. This was the best that you could have hoped for in a matchup in every single way. There was absolutely no excitement of being the sixth seed. There was no excitement of being in the play-in round once we hit a certain point this year. It became about reaching for the stars. And in this case, the stars were the fourth seed. And this goal has been accomplished. And now, instead of matching up with the Heat, instead of matching up with the Milwaukee Bucks, you get a team that you can't help but be confident about being able to beat. The Atlanta Hawks are a slight, slight favorite over the Knicks at minus 115 to minus 105. And the reason is, I don't think it's terribly debatable that the Hawks overall have better talent than the Knicks. But the intangible here is that both of these teams are lacking playoff experience. These two teams, with who's going to be on the floor, just haven't really been there before, save for a couple of them. You know, Nerlens Noel's 12 playoff games in his career don't exactly make you feel terribly comfortable in the situation, right? Doesn't make you feel like you're all experienced and ready to go. Clint Capella on the other side, he has been to the playoffs. He understands what it's about. But overall, these are two teams that have both been outside the playoffs for quite some time and not much experience to work with. And I think in that respect, the Knicks have the biggest advantage. Why? Yeah, they're lacking the experience like the Hawks are. But there's one thing that the Knicks do that has nothing to do with experience. It's defense. In every single way, it has carried them this season. It has. It's been so brilliant to watch, but not just because they play with such great effort and such great technique, but defense is about buy-in. And we've talked so much about buy-in all season long that it feels like a bit of a cliche, a bit of a trite characteristic, but it's not. It is not often in the NBA these days that you get everybody pulling the rope in the same direction. But that has been absolutely the trademark of this team. The trademark of a coach that has come in and been able to take roughly the same roster and turn it into a top four seed in the Eastern Conference. Are they the fourth best team in the East? Maybe not. But they play with the fourth best team effort, so to speak. In other words, they do everything they can to get everything out of what they have. They, every single day, are draining every ounce of energy out of themselves to win a game on a given night. And that's what that coach wants to do. You know, earlier this year, there was a profile about Worldwide West and about Leon Rose and how they were leading the organization. And they're still in their infancy in doing it. But there was a line in there about how Tom Thibodeau would sell his soul to win any particular night. And that is very much the case. But you see that with the team. It is rare that they get their doors blown off. It happened on the last road trip in Denver, but so often they find themselves in the mix in a game, even if they're going to lose, even if they're not going to make plays down the stretch of a game. And it's hard not to put your money, your bet toward a team like that when you're facing, to me, a Hawks team that has not exactly exhibited those kind of characteristics. They're not a good defensive team. They have a superstar young player in the making in Trae Young. He is special. So special in every single way. But that doesn't mean that he's going to have a massive advantage in this series. Julius Randle has been special all year long. He hasn't been to the playoffs either. What's he going to look like? Especially when he has been somebody that has torched the Hawks in the three games that they have played. Two of those games being 40-plus point games. So when you factor all of that in and you consider how this team has operated like the Big 15 all year long, to me it's virtually impossible to pick against the Knicks. It truly is. And I love the fact that you have a coach that is able to read so much into his team, is able to maximize the return on them, is not wearing them thin, as we've heard before, how he can have that kind of an effect on teams. Here's what we know. We are seeing the exact same thing that we saw in these other two places where he was. They get in a better and better situation as an organization each day that he is there. And in those two other cases, he left and the situation got infinitely worse. You've got this guy. You've got this mentality. You've got everybody pulling on the rope in the same direction. You've got the Big 15. For all of these reasons, and we'll get into all of the X's and O's tonight, but to me, all of these intangible reasons, I love the Knicks at six in this series. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN, every single aspect of the Knicks front to back tonight over the next couple of hours. It is your chance to talk about this weekend and how exciting it is and the opportunity to be back in the playoffs and the opportunity to have 15,000 in Madison Square Garden. going absolutely nuts on Sunday evening at 6:58. Ready for tip-off. The energy is back. It has been entirely too long. But we are here. Got to give this guy his chance to start things off tonight. He is Spike in St. Pete up first. Spike, what's going on, brother? How are you? Spike.
Yeah, I don't like to lose any time, and there's a clock ticking in life. Who wants to? But bring me to Sunday at 6:58. Listen, these two teams are evenly matched to one extent, is that they both won the same amount of games, give or take a game. And I'm fine with it. I think the defense always wins out, or 90% of the time. And you have nine guys in double figures. We all know the numbers. Lou Williams has some playoff experiences. He's on the downside. He's been off, but he can have a good game.
He's kind of a wild card. He could be a guy that could explode in a game at any moment.
Yeah, and he couldn't guard you. So we've got to take advantage of that. Trey Young is a 34.3% three-point shooter. That's it. But he's a great penetrator, and he gets a lot of assists. So bottle him up. I give him I can test him on his shot. Just don't let him get to the basket. The toughest guy to guard is going to, for some reason, I got a mental block. Capella. I got it. That's the tough guy.
His numbers against the Knicks this season have been ridiculous. He's averaging 17-17 against the Knicks. He had 22-25 last time.
Okay, so what do you do with him? Nerlens is too small. Gibson will rough him up. You got to box him out. You know, people forget that Laker game. We win if we box out. You got to do the basics, and Thibodeau's gone through this team with a fine-tooth comb, as you know. And I think the crowd is going to be gigantic. If I was close by, I'd get my ass into that arena, whatever it would cost, because that's going to be – can you imagine how loud that's going to be?
It's going to be insane. It's going to be absolutely insane, Spike. Thanks for the call. It's going to be just beyond nuts. And I would love to be there on Sunday. Just the fact that that number got bumped all the way up to 15,000 after it was basically 2,000 all season long, and the players were impressed with what fans could bring at just 2,000, the excitement level that was there, they're going to blow the roof off the place before tip-off. I absolutely believe that the Knicks are going to have a huge, huge home court advantage. And I have to tell you, like when I look at these two teams, and I've said this a couple times this week, when you look at what they've both done at home and what they've both done on the road, they basically have been about the same teams. So home court is phenomenal, but you have to make sure to take advantage of it. And this is the thing. That playoff experience, or the lack of playoff experience, I should say, that also can play in with these guys being a little bit nervous in front of a huge crowd because they haven't been there really in this spot. In a town where they've been playoff hungry for years and years and years. 800-919-3776. Eli in Rockland is up next on 98.7 ESPN. Eli, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Chris, I'm totally with you. The Knicks are going to win in six, like you said. And we're not delusional. They probably will not get out of the second round. But let me tell you what's also not delusional. I believe the Nets will not make the finals, will not get into the finals. They will be knocked out. I'm not sure which team or one of them is going to knock them out. And let me tell you something. We could look Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant in the eye and say, we don't need you. No, thank you. We're going to do it without buying star power, without...
Okay, but hang on a second. Let's not turn this into something that it's not. You don't need to worry about Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and James Harden right now, okay? They said no to you, and I do think there's an interesting aspect of that, but right now you can't sit there and expect to be going further than them, and I know you don't, but don't just whitewash them out of going to the finals. They have the most talent in the conference. And you could argue that talent-wise they have the best big three in the history of the game.
Chris, wouldn't it be sweet if they don't make the finals? Come on. Are you with me?
You know what? They are an unlikable team, Eli, and thanks for the call, because of how this has all come together. Harden really has made it an unlikable situation because of how he got here and everything he did to get what he wanted. And so Harden's here. This team hasn't played together, but yet you see them play together when they do, and you can't help but expect them to win. It might be disappointing to you to think about that, but it's true. But if you're the Knicks, dude, forget about the Nets. They have nothing to do with you right now. You swat them away like a fly. You're a Knicks fan. You want to feel superior. Feel superior about this. The Knicks, it would cost you just for a single ticket, not even to be able to sit with somebody else, it would probably cost you at least $1,000 to get into that building on Sunday. At least. The Nets are doing a 50% off playoff tickets special for people who are vaccinated. What? With the promo code Harden? Because James is covering your 50%? Well, that's not exactly what's going on, but you get the point. The Nets can't sell tickets to the postseason with the three best players in the league right now together and the best big three of, they're not the three best players in the league, but you understand what I'm saying. The best big three in the league and potentially the best big three of all time. If you're really going to look at it from a talent perspective and the other big threes that we've had. Could be the best of all time. And they can't pay you to go to the games right now. That tells you about what the Nets mean here versus what they mean across the country. Because people are so much more interested in the individual players. Brandon in New York City is up next, 98.7 ESPN. Brandon, what's going on, bud?
Yeah. Nothing. What's going on with you? Let's stop talking about the Monstars and start talking about these Knicks, right? We hear.
What's going on?
But first and foremost, I think, you know, I was thinking about, you know, this game one a lot. And, you know, I know a lot of talking and listening to DiPietro and Rothenberg in the morning. And, you know, I have a lot to think about with the whole starting point guard position because – you think about it, Elfrid Payton hasn't been doing much. And I know that he is in there for his defense, but we need scoring. And as of right now, he's not doing that. And I think, I mean, I don't know about you, but I know he's a rookie, but why not give Emmanuel quickly a chance? I mean, I know he's a shooting guard / point guard, but the kid can shoot, the kid can dish, he can do a lot. Why not go that route?
It's not going that route. Okay, if you listen to what we have heard from Tom Thibodeau, even as recently as this afternoon on the show with Michael, Don, and Peter, he basically told you that Payton does enough things for them defensively that allows them to do other things that he values above anything that you would see on the stat sheet. You can't argue with what he's doing or not doing, frankly, on the stat sheet right now, but it's not happening.
Okay.
You're not going to see him do that at this juncture of the season, considering he has done it all year. And even though they don't get great results offensively early, he obviously believes in something that Payton is doing that we don't necessarily see.
You know, but I don't understand, like, because at the beginning of the season, Elfrid Payton was scoring, and I don't know what the hell happened. You know, he was doing his thing, and then all of a sudden, his point production just dropped. I mean, and I know we could see that other players are producing, like R.J. Barrett, and, you know, even players like Nerlens Noel is not the scoring, but the defense. And not only that, we're looking at Taj Gibson, the veteran, even putting in effort. But again, I think Elfrid Payton was at one point a good player, and I don't know what happened. He just dropped off, and I know
he's been awful offensively, and thanks for the call. Awful offensively. Elfrid Payton won't be on this team next year, but right now, Thibodeau has enough faith in the other things that he does for them. where it's exceptionally unlikely that he's going to change this up right now. I mean, maybe if it gets really bad in the first game or two, he will. But I just don't see it. And I listened to him this afternoon with Michael, and I got no indication whatsoever that a change was coming with as confidently as he was speaking about him. James in Spring Valley next, 98.7 ESPN. A big Jimbo, what do you got?
Listen, all these Knicks fans need to stop talking about the Nets. No one cares about the Nets. Let's talk about the Knicks right now. I'm happy. I know Brian is happy. Knicks fans have been clamoring for this. So I got to ask you this, Carlin. I think the Knicks are going to win in six. I mean, I went as far as maybe seven, but the Knicks are going to win in six. But for both teams, what's the biggest X factor for the Knicks, and what's the biggest X factor for the Atlanta Hawks?
Biggest X factor for the Hawks is DeAndre Hunter. Okay, he's just back the last few games from injury, and that's a guy that can have a real impact. A mini X factor is Lou Williams, but I don't expect him. He's capable of exploding, but I don't expect him to really do that. On the Knicks side, is calling R.J. Barrett an X factor unfair because he's too big of what they do?
No, it's not. It's fair because, remember, the guy's only 20 years old. And
right.
I think that
and my point on that, my point on RJ is, and thanks for the call, James, he is going into this for the first time and going to see what it's like. And if he adapts to it very quickly, that could go a long way. For me, I'm so interested in seeing exactly how he's going to respond to all of this. Did you know that in the three games this year against the Hawks, the Knicks limited Trae Young to 36% from the floor and 21% from three? Those are alarming numbers if you're the Atlanta Hawks, and ones that should trouble you. 800-919-3776, open lines, and a good chance to talk to you about the Knicks and the Hawks on Sunday. Let's go and get on board. You know, when it comes to Trae Young, he is somebody that is such a young player, and you are going to find out exactly what he's all about in the playoffs when he's never been there before and he has this immense pressure on him. But what I do look at is that's somebody that does not have a conscience when it comes to shooting. And those guys will scare me. So even though he's got those numbers against the Knicks this season, he is the kind of guy that I feel like has a short memory and is able to move on pretty quickly from it and isn't afraid, even if he's not shooting the basketball well, to take every shot. He's not going to let a 1-for-8 start stop him in a series like this. I want to get him out of a rhythm. I want to throw everything I can at him defensively because that's what worked for them the first couple of times. Constantly keep him guessing about what he's going to be facing. And while that he is somebody that would aspire to be Steph Curry or somebody like that, he is nowhere near it yet. So this is the time in his first playoff series where the Knicks have to get rough. The Knicks have to make him feel it. And the Knicks have to stick to the principles that led to those kinds of numbers this season when they faced him and had good success against him defensively. 800-919-3776. Let's go to Isaac in Tuxedo. Isaac is up next, 98.7 ESPN. Isaac, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, Chris. How you doing?
Good.
You're about the hardest working man in showbiz right now. I've been hearing you morning and night throughout this whole week, but I just want to get to a quick couple points. First thing I want to say, I hate to be this guy, but I just have to say it. Alfred Payton is about probably the second worst Knick point guard of all time.
Behind
that guy from Temple that we had for a few years. I forget
Rick
his name.
Rick Brunson?
I don't know if you remember that.
Rick Brunson?
No, the guy from Temple, it was like 2005, 6, I think around like the Nate Robinson and David Lee time frame. But anyway,
But yeah, he's about second to him. But
you're making me go back and look at 2005 with the Knicks, and that's not exactly something I want to be doing.
Yeah, no, exactly. But that's what I'm saying. He's not even like a NBA first team on defense. So his defense doesn't do that much to cover up that offense. But I know Tom is going to stick with it because he has a team in the flow right now, the routine. So I'm not mad at it. But I'm super excited about this series. Finally get to see what our Knicks are about. I'm going to be personally watching Tom Thibodeau because although I do appreciate the good things he's done, he's obviously not a unflawed coach. He has flaws, some of the management, you know, rotations and stuff I've had some issues with. So I'm curious to see what he does for the playoffs and how he gets us prepared and ready to go. But either way, we got home court advantage. I mean, you go to Atlanta, and it's all Knicks fans there anyway, mostly. So we're going to have a lot of fans behind us. They're always going to have a crowd, so they should be in good shape.
Yeah, Atlanta's not the world's greatest sports town, that's for sure. And the Knicks fans do travel well. We had Alan on earlier today, ironically, on Bart and Han, and Alan expected it to be 50% Knicks fans. I think that number's a bit high, but I do think it'll be a pretty good number that's going to show up in Atlanta. The guy you're thinking of is Marty Collins. I had forgotten completely about Marty Collins.
Yes, Marty Collins, he was the worst. But I mean,
why did you make me think of Marty Collins tonight?
I you know what? And it's unfortunate, but it just came to me. I was like, man, Elfrid Payton. I was like, he's not the worst, but he's second worst. Because I'd rather have Chris Duhon right now.
But he's slightly better than Marty Collins.
He's slightly better than Marty Collins. Marty Collins couldn't do anything, but I'd rather have Chris Duhon right now than to have Elfrid Payton.
Look, I mean. Peyton's not going anywhere at the moment, Isaac, and thanks for the call. He's staying in the lineup. Unless it just gets unbearably bad early and the Knicks are down 2-0 and it's because they've gotten off to terrible starts. But I don't anticipate that happening. Thibodeau doesn't strike me as somebody that's going to make that kind of a change, even though you can look at what he has offered offensively and understand that that is nothing. And you can see it pretty quickly. Let's hit Josh in Queens next, 98.7 ESPN. Hello, Josh.
Hey, Chris. Am I on with the New Jersey Sportscaster of the Year?
Two-time New Jersey Sportscaster of the Year.
Thank you. Well, thank you for taking my call, Chris. I think we spoke earlier this week sort of around this notion too with Elfrid Payton. And I kind of defended him. I know a lot of Knicks fans are down on him. And listen, I'm not an Elfrid Payton fan. But I will say this. I don't know if you follow Tommy Beer of Forbes at all. He tweeted out a great NBA stat with Elfrid Payton guarding Trae Young. And in the 14 minutes or so that he has guarded Trae Young, unfortunately, Trae Young has scored 22 points and dished out 10 assists, with the Hawks scoring a total of 92 points over 56 offensive possessions for Atlanta. So, listen.
Now I just want to get in the film room with Tibbs for 5 minutes and just do me a favor. Show me what it is that Peyton actually brings.
I think you got to a point, though. What you noted before is Tibbs likes to throw a bunch of things at point guards. He doesn't like to give them one look. He likes to mix it up with Rose, Burks, Quickly, and he'll do that with Trae Young because, like you said, Trae Young has he has no conscience with shooting.
No conscience and a quick release.
Luka has arrived in New York, and by game four, he could be a possibility to start. I know it's a stretch. We need some injuries, but Luka's in New York. We have an extra guard. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. I would not count on that, Josh. Thanks for the call. I would not count on that. How about Mike in Queens is next at 98.7 ESPN. Michael, what's up, baby?
Hey, Chris, how are you, man? Thanks for taking the call. I'm a big fan.
Mikey, I appreciate that. Are you fired up?
I am. Huge fan. And, you know, look, I think the interesting part, you know, with the Knicks is Alex Burks. He gets a lot of praise and a lot of love, and deservedly so, as a 3-and-D who can handle the ball. But I think a player that a lot of fans overlook right now is Reggie Bullock. And, you know, I think he's going to play an important role here with his defense, obviously, because it's solid. But, you know, I think for us to win this series, he's going to have to hit some big shots for us. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I think Reggie Bullock is somebody that, you're right, probably hasn't gotten the love that they deserve. It's not like he's hit every single big shot, but let me ask you this question. At the beginning of the year versus now, if I told you in the last 30 seconds of a game that he was actually an option to shoot the basketball, do you feel 100 times better today than you did back at the beginning of the year? The answer is yes.
Without a doubt, right? I mean, look, I don't know if he's going to be closing games, but, you know, when he's on the court, you know, Randall has a way of finding him. And, you know, they have great spacing right now with you know, under the coaching staff. And it's just such a huge difference. And, you know, the way Randall finds Bullock on the court, you know, Bullock's going to have some shots available to him. And the Hawks don't play great D. And, you know, hopefully he can hit the majority of them.
Listen, I'm very comfortable with the ball in his hands, Mike. And thanks for the call. I mean, frankly, when it comes to the big shot in the game, I'm more comfortable with the ball in his hands than I am with R.J. Barrett taking a big shot at the end of a game right now in the postseason, just based on strictly a veteran versus somebody that's still finding his way. I want this guy to take his shot. And I'm going to be comfortable if they come down and are down one with 10 seconds left, and their best options are covered up, you know, if they're tripling Julius Randle and Reggie Bullock is open, I'm going to be comfortable with that look. I am. And I'd be surprised if you weren't. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. You know, all of this dichotomy between the Knicks and the Nets got me thinking about Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and their decision. When you look at it now, would they do it differently? Going back in time, a couple of years, to when Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving made their decision. And at the time, you understood it because the situation at the Garden had become such a mess, such an absolute disaster. And they were not anywhere near to having it straightened out yet. So you understood why they felt the need to sign with Brooklyn as opposed to really giving the Knicks any true consideration. And Durant, of course, at the time said, well, the Knicks aren't cool. If you gave them the benefit of hindsight, if you asked the two of them right now, if they were thinking, first of all, that they were going to come and take over the city, even knowing that they got James Harden, do you think they would have gone to the Knicks instead? Just knowing everything that we know right now. And obviously it's a big hypothetical. But if you asked either one of them at the moment, I'd be shocked if they said that they wouldn't go to the Knicks after seeing what's transpired this year, if they had the benefit to do it all over again. And they're going to win a championship here with Harden, if not this year, certainly within the next couple of seasons. You know, I would not expect any of them to sign anywhere else. Maybe I'm going to be wrong about that, but I would expect them to stay together until at least they win one. But think about that for a second. The Knicks were not cool at the time. It was an utter disaster. But how quickly that has turned around is the best, most remarkable development of what has transpired this year. Not that they have found themselves in the fourth spot in the East. Not that they have played brilliant defense all year long. Not that Julius Randle has become a star player in the league, but that the Knicks and the perception of Madison Square Garden has done a 180. They together have done a 180 in terms of that possibility of stars coming here, considering where they were just a couple of years ago. I can't believe they've done that in a year. Think about that for a second. Leon Rose, World Wide West, they didn't think that they were going to be able to change the perception of all this in just a year. I remember having Woj on before the beginning of the season and talking about how long it was going to take to be able to get the premier free agents to really consider the Knicks as a destination. And part of the discussion from Woj was simply that those two, as strong as their relationships are in the basketball world, they're now in a new role. They're now playing the role of basketball executives. And there was a trust level that had to be built up with agents, with players, to believe in what they were doing. And that was not going to be a one-year process. But this is what makes it all the more amazing that it's happened that quickly. You have been able to combine the two of them and the power of Tom Thibodeau as the coach and the power of the buy-in of the players and what they've been able to do. And players from the outside can't help but look at this and say, they must have an incredibly strong culture. Because you don't get that kind of buy-in if you don't have that kind of culture. If you don't have one that is set up to win when you get the right players in. So I'm willing to bet that understanding that James Harden just had to go do a promo to sell playoff tickets, that if Durant and Kyrie had a chance to do it all over again, they would have signed with the Knicks. Again, benefit of hindsight. But this whole idea that the Nets were ever going to take over this city was so misguided. And whoever told them that that was going to happen, I mean, Kyrie should have known it. He's a Nets fan, for Pete's sake. They didn't sell out finals games against the Spurs in their heyday and the Shaq and Kobe Lakers. That was a complete joke. No matter where they're playing, if the Nets are playing at Madison Square Garden, they're not going to take over this town from the Knicks. It's not going to matter. If Jesus is playing for the Nets, they're not going to take over this town. 800-919-3776. Sean in New Jersey is next. 98.7 ESPN. Hello, Sean.
Chris, my man.
How you doing, brother?
That point you just made about how Brooklyn will never take over New York City, I completely agree. You know, we're very loyal, even through thick and thin. We bleed orange and blue here in New York. And, you know, it's been tough for the last couple of, 20 years, I would say, to be a Knicks fan. But, you know, we fought through that, and now we have a shot in the playoffs. And I wanted to say, mention about the point guard situation that you were talking about earlier.
Sure.
I think part of the Knicks' success, obviously it goes to Randall's improvement this year, but it also goes to our second unit. We have Rose coming off the bench, and the reason why I don't agree with these armchair GMs that are saying that you should start Rose over Elfrid Payton is because Rose and the second unit, they bring it. They bring it with Alec Burks, Derrick Rose, and Quickly, all coming off the bench, able to score, continue when the first unit is taking a rest. I think that's part of where our success is coming from.
Well, they do bring it, thanks for the call. They bring it in an aspect that it is incredibly energetic, especially if you get off to a slower start. But the bigger issue with Rose is this. You need him on the court at the end of the game. That's when it's going to matter the most. And you can't extend Derrick Rose beyond 25, 30 minutes. You just can't do it. You're asking too much from him then. That does not help you if you run him into the ground. Here's the problem, okay? I'm the guy that I will start just being exceptionally positive. Like I am on a night like tonight, so fired up for Sunday. And then I read something really stupid or somebody goes over the edge in what they're saying. And that just annoys me and starts to get me to think about going the other way. I'm not even going to tell you who tweeted it. But I just read this tweet and it drives me absolutely insane. RJ Barrett is really morphing into the locker room Jeter in terms of his persona that stood out to me in doing due diligence on him going to Duke. Thinking we will see a similar performance to Jeter's inaugural welcome to the playoffs in 96. Excellence unfazed by the moment. Come on. Can we not? Can we not? Here I was just feeling all positive and excited and all that. And then I got to go read something stupid. God, why do we always have to jump the gun? This is, I'll tell you who it is. It's Tommy D on Twitter. Tommy D, the big Knicks fan guy. And, you know, from fansided and all that. I mean, it's just absurd. It's just absolutely absurd to compare before he's ever played a playoff game and expect RJ Barrett to turn into the Knicks' Derek Jeter. That's just dumb. And here I was, all happy. 800-919-3776. Graham's in New York next, 98.7 ESPN. Graham, what's going on?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
I mean, Graham, I can only take so much, right? Like, I can be a very positive person. I don't want to be a negative guy, but sometimes I just read something that's so stupid and it drives me nuts.
I mean, there's a lot of stupid people out there. So.
What do you got?
I mean, I don't like Alfred Payton, obviously, like most people don't starting, but, you know, like you said, it's really just the end of the game that matters, that lineup, much more than, like, who starts. As far as you were talking about who takes the, you know, the shot other than Randall, I mean, it's got to be Reggie Bullock or Derrick Rose. You can't, I mean, I don't want the ball in RJ Barrett's hands. He's just not there yet as a player.
No, absolutely not. And I feel very good with the ball in the hands of, you know, Bullock or really Alec Burks. I'm good with that. I don't, and it's not a knock on Barrett. It's just that he's not there yet necessarily.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I grew up watching the Knicks. My dad used to pick in the Garden. I was in the Garden for the Larry Johnson 4-point play. And I was like 13 years old, I think, 12. And I mean, there was five guys on top of me and beer all over me. I remember going out of the Garden, leaving the Garden, and people were literally jumping on the top of cars. It was just one of those great memories of the Garden. So yeah, I'm super excited for Saturday. I mean, for Sunday.
We know how incredible of an experience it can be. And thanks, Graham, for the call. That, frankly, has me as excited as could be. And to have that many fans back in the building, to have a chance to have 15,000 in the building, it was basically 75% full at that point. That's awesome. That's going to be a massive home court advantage. The only thing I worry about is while it is a home court advantage and they can play a huge role in that, you do have an inexperienced playoff team. So could the pressure of playing in front of that crowd when you haven't done it in so long actually work against you a little bit? I don't know. I fully believe that the Knicks will have a great home court advantage in this. But don't rule out the notion that for the guys that haven't been there, that there could be an awful lot of nerves playing at home in front of that building. Because there absolutely could be.
Coming in with different teams that I've been with, it's such a special place. I know we have the greatest fans in the world. It's the most famous arena. And hopefully we can give them something to be proud of. But I think just in terms of, you know, where our team is and the support that we've gotten thus far, you know, we're looking forward to it. We can't wait to be there with the fans. And they're such an important part of the game. And there's no other place like Madison Square Garden.
15,000 going to be in the building Sunday night. That's Tom Thibodeau earlier today on the Michael Kay Show. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. In 2 minutes, we'll tell you why the Knicks will win in six. But first, you're owed an apology. At the beginning of this season, I sat down, I looked at the roster, I understood that the Knicks were in phase one, the very early phases. You'd call it embryonic where the Knicks were when it came time to start the 2021 season. And it's more than fair for us to say that at the time, expectations were remarkably low. The over-under, as we know, 22 wins. They blew the doors off of that. The talent from last season had not changed other than Alec Burks. It was virtually the same team. It was a new coach, a new team president, a whole new staff, a whole new front office, with one exception of Scott Perry. You felt as if things could go in the right direction this year and you would see some growth. And maybe, just maybe, you'd be able to find your way to 30 wins. But I was one of the many, but frankly, one with a microphone that did not think the Knicks were going to do a damn thing. And when they got out to what, a 5-1 start, whatever it was, I just said, everybody, just chill, okay? Just chill. Don't get ahead of yourselves. We know what this is. We understand where they are. This has been a nice first week and a half. But I didn't want you to get let down or to get hurt. And more than anything, I didn't want you to live in that. I didn't want you to feel that pain. I think that was fair of me. I was somebody that wanted you to be able to just incrementally enjoy the moment, but enjoy the growth of the team and understand that you finally had a coach that knew what he was doing and things were going to get better. But I was hearing from a lot of you at 5-3 in early January that were jumping around excited for what this could be. And I sat there and of the notion of the Knicks being a playoff team, well, I virtually urinated on it. I did. I was ripping away any hope that you might have had because I didn't want you to be hurt. I was looking out for you because I've always said this about hope. It's okay to have hope, but understand hope has other implications too.
Hope is a dangerous thing. Hope can drive a man insane.
I didn't want that for you. I wanted you to just think big picture, calm blue ocean, not get yourself too wrapped up. And what happened at 5-3? They lost five in a row. And I'm jumping around. I haven't heard from any of you, and I was celebrating. Like I was some big deal. Wasn't celebrating the notion of the Knicks being bad, but celebrating the notion that I was right about something. You know what it was? It was petty. It was petty on my part. It was unbecoming on my part. Well, here we are. It was just an absolutely remarkable season. I couldn't have been more wrong about it. I don't want to qualify my apology by saying that there's no way any of us expected this, but I sat here with this microphone and I castigated you for having hope, for looking at what was going on and feeling as if it was special, because I felt like you were just coming out of the desert and having that first little drop of water. And all of a sudden, you were going to be feeling like you were swimming in it when they ripped the bottle away. I was doing it for you, but I enjoyed it a little too much. I was wrong. I am sorry, Knicks fans. I want you to be happy. And that's why last week when I got a little bummed out by that loss to the Lakers, I was living in that moment with you. I was living in a moment that you haven't had to live in so long. Just having passion for a team that had been passionless for 8 years and seemed rudderless. I got caught up in the moment, and that's okay. And I hope that you're getting caught up in the moment right now. Because as we have learned, this does not happen all the time. You have gone through more than your share of pain for the last 20 seasons. This is the beginning of a new era, and you are seeing early return. There will be other massive steps that have to be taken in the process of building a championship organization. But for what's happened this year and what you have right now, enjoy the moment. I'm sorry I tried to take away your hope. I'm sorry that I tried to take away your joy.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.